actually pretty much all the interesting books that Angela has read, I've read as well. So I, when she was in 1988, The Doll's House, of Mice and Men, just this summer, Tenth Grade Book Thief, that was pretty amazing. And just this summer, Jane Eyre. This is one of those books where mommy goes into hibernation and you get your own food because mommy's not cooking. Mommy's sitting there reading for hours and hours and hours and waking up at 5 in the morning to find out what happened. This book, it was amazing. So for me to tell you what my favorite book is very difficult because I love all these books and now I can't wait to read The Scarlet Letter. And it's not just reading the book and the content, but it's the context. Which is, I get to read a book and then Angela and I get to discuss it. So, I read 1984 too. Food House. Did you guys read 1984? What do you think? Weird.
What is it?
Weird. Caleb is weird. Anyway.
Is it about a dictatorship?
Yeah, pretty much.
It sounds like
where you have thought control police and they watch everything you do, and they demand total loyalty of you to the point where they'll torture you if you don't say the right thing. It was like
creepy.
Huh? Why?
That's the relationship that Trump has with staff. He wants total loyalty.
Is that a phrase he uses?
No, it's true.
So anyway, I just wanted to share how reading books in our family has been such a bonding thing since the kids were little and all the way, like I said, I still read, if Angela's reading a book, I'm going to read it so I can talk to her about it, you know, the book thieves and all the other books. But when the kids were little, that was like one of our favorite things to do together, to sit together on the sofa. We read all the Arthur books, not because Daddy's name is Arthur, but Arthur the Aardvark, and my sister Belinda, you know, Judy, Auntie Belinda loves books. She gave us the whole set. We read those books together. We read all the Amelia Bedelia's, Care Bears, all these books we would read together, and it was like one of the favorite things that we would do in the evening. But it just didn't end when they were little, because especially since we homeschooled, then afterwards we would read. I read this 3 times, the whole set. Once with the older boys, and then with Daniel and Angela, and then just with Angela. And we just love. Ashley, did you read these? Don't you love it? All the little parts of like a long winter where they only had one potato left, but then Alonzo was living high on the hog with Roy, his brother, and they were eating pancakes and everything. And Paul was so tired of them starving that he went to their house and he noticed that the wall was 1 foot in. So he goes in the house, pulls the plug, and lets all the grain fall into his pail. He goes, "Hey, how did you know that we had grain in our house?" He goes, "Because your house is 1 foot more than what it was on the inside." And so basically he's saying, "You guys are living high on the hog. My family is starving. I'm getting your grain." He goes, "That's my seed for next year. How do you take it?" He goes, "You know, we're starving over there. You guys are eating like that." So there's all these little stories and the long winter where Laura was teaching at a school at the Brewsters and having a churro behind, but then Alonzo would go pick her up. And then she told him, I don't know why you're coming to pick me up because I don't really like you. So, you know, don't pick me up. And she had a really bad week and then she was going, "Oh, I just gave up my ride back home because now he's not going to come pick me up." And then she's in the classroom, voting a classroom, and she hears the jingle bell coming in the course play, and she goes, and then he says, like, "What kind of man do you take me to be? Like, you think I'm just going to come and leave you at the Brewster's?" And he goes, "Even though you're not interested in me, I'll still take you home," and then, you know, eventually they end up getting married, but the Indian in the cover? Any of you guys read the Indian in the cover? That was actually, Anna and I got a little creeped out on it. You know, it gets a little strange, but that was a good book. And then when they got older, there's these classic books like Ishmael. All my kids read Ishmael. Yeah, Kathy, we went to Kathy, she read it too. And even to my math class, I would read them 7 loaves of bread and self-procrastination. And then, of course, Arthur went safely home with the kids, and I would just be in the other room, and I would hear them, please, Dad, one more chapter. They would beg him to not stop reading, and we enjoyed that book a lot. So these are some of our favorites. And, of course, the Johnny book, The God I Love, is one that, well, we're friends with Johnny, so there was one chapter where she had this buddy, and her sister was very mean. So she had this stuffed animal bunny, and then the sister, like, did something very mean to the bunny, and Johnny, like, hated her. Like, how dare you do that to Bunny? And so I email her, Johnny, that was so sad. The kids felt so bad for you that happened to your bunny. She wrote that, like, yeah. My sister and I would just laugh about it now. But I just wanted to share that I was going to read you a book because instead of, I just wanted you to go on a journey and what it's like to share a book together. But I, maybe I have a little bit of time, but I don't think I could finish the book. It was The Velveteen Rabbit. But I just wanted to share how, I know Robert said you guys just listened to it. How many of you guys know the story of The Velveteen Rabbit? Oh my. Do you guys, could you stay for 10, 15 minutes longer? Yeah? Okay. Well, anyways, I just want to say this. I want to say, when you guys have kids, when you guys, if you guys are blessed to have kids and have a family, don't just stick them with their iPads, but read with them. It's just so precious time, and we love, and we laugh together. We go on a journey together through the book. I remember before we went to Boston, I read Johnny Tremaine with the kids so we could kind of get into the East Coast news. And it's just amazing. We laugh together, cry together. There were times where Randall, you know, my son, who's all like buff and burly, we would be at the lane about to play tennis, but we were at the end of where the red fern grows, where, you know, little Ann and old Dan, and Randall and I were crying our eyes out, and I'm trying to finish reading, and we're like, you know, just our face of money, just like crying, and it's just that we shared that memory together, and he also cried with Ben Charlotte's lips. He didn't like it when Charlotte died. But the bonding that you have when you share a story together is like amazing. So anyway, I'll see how far I can get, and then maybe you just have to finish it yourself. Okay, so this story is called The Velveteen Rabbit. Okay. There was once a Velveteen Rabbit, and in the beginning he was really splendid. He was fat and bunchy, as a rabbit should be. His coat was spotted brown and white. He had real thread whiskers, and his ears were lined with pink sateen. On Christmas morning, when he sat wedged in the top of the boy's stocking with a sprig of holly between his paws, the effect was charming. There were other things in the stocking, nuts and oranges and a toy engine and chocolate almonds and a clockwork mouse, but the rabbit was quite the best of all. For at least 2 hours, the boy loved him. And then aunts and uncles came to dinner, and there was a great rustling of tissue paper and a wrapping of parcels, and in the excitement of looking at all the new presents, the Velveteen Rabbit was forgotten. For a long time, he lived in the toy cupboard or on the nursery floor, and no one thought very much about him. He was naturally shy, and being only made of velveteen, some of the more expensive toys quite snubbed him. The mechanical toys were very superior and looked down upon everyone else. They were full of modern ideas and pretended they were real. The model boat who lived through 2 seasons and lost most of his paint across the tones on them and never missed his opportunity of referring to his rigging in technical terms.
The rabbi cannot claim to be a model of anything, for he did not know that real rabbits existed. He thought they were all stuffed with sawdust like him, and he understood that sawdust was quite out of date and should never be mentioned in modern circles. Even Timothy, the jointed wooden lion, who was made by the disabled soldiers and should have had broader views, put on airs and pretended he was connected with government. Between them all, the poor little rabbit was made to feel himself very insignificant and commonplace, and the only person who was kind to him at all was Skin the horse. The Skin horse had lived longer in the nursery than any of the others. He was so old that his brown coat would fall in patches and show the seams underneath, and most of the hairs in his tail had been pulled out to string bead necklaces. He looked wise when he had seen a long succession of mechanical toys arrive to bolt and swagger, and by and by break their mainsprings and pass away, and he knew they were only toys and would never turn into anything else. For nursery magic is very strange and wonderful, and only those playthings that are old and wise and experienced like the Skin horse understood all about it. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side in the nursery fender before Nana came to tidy the room. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and stick out candles?" "Real isn't how you're made," said the Skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the Skin horse, but he was always truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once, like being wound up?" he asked. "Or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once," said the Skin horse. "You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or have sharp edges, or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because when you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." "I suppose you are real," said the rabbit, and then he wished he had not said it, for he thought the Skin horse might be sensitive. The Skin horse only smiled. "The boy's uncle made me real," he said. "That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always." The rabbit sighed. He thought it would be a long time before the magic called real happened to him. He longed to become real, to know what it felt like, and yet the idea of growing shabby and losing his eyes and whiskers was rather sad. He wished that he could become it without these uncomfortable things happening to him. There was a person called Nan who ruled the nursery. Sometimes she took no notice of the playthings lying about, and sometimes, for no reason whatsoever, she went swooping about like a great wind and hustled them away in cupboards. She called it tidying up, and the playthings all hated it, especially the tin ones. The rabbit didn't mind it so much, for whether it was thrown, he came down soft. One evening, when the boy was going to bed, he couldn't find the china doll that always slept with him. Nana was in a hurry and was too much trouble to hunt for china dogs at bedtime, so she simply looked about her, and seeing the toy cupboard door stood open, she made a swoop. "Here," she said, "take your old buddy. He'll do to sleep with you." And she dragged the rabbit out by one ear and put him in the boy's arm. That night, and for many nights after, the velveteen rabbit slept in the boy's bed. At first, he found it rather uncomfortable, for the boy hugged him very tight, and sometimes he rolled over on him, and sometimes he pushed him so far into the pillow that the rabbit could scarcely breathe. And he missed, too, those long moonlight hours in the nursery when all the house was silent and his talks with the Skin horse. But very soon he grew to like it, for the boy used to talk to him and made nice tunnels for him under the bedclothes that he said were like burrows the real rabbits lived in, and they had splendid games together in whispers when Nana had gone away to her supper and left the nightlight burning on the mantelpiece. And when the boy dropped off to sleep, the rabbit was snuggled down close under his little warm chin and dreamed with the boy's hand clasped close around him all night long. And so time went on, and the little rabbit was very happy, so happy that he never noticed how his beautiful velveteen fur was getting shabbier and shabbier, and his tail was coming unsewn, and all the pink rubbed off his nose where the boy had kissed him. Spring came and had long days in the garden, but wherever the boy went, the rabbit went too. He had rides in the wheelbarrow, and picnics on the grass, and lovely fair huts built from the under the raspberry cane behind the flower border. And once, when the boy was totally suddenly to go out to tea, the rabbit was left out in the lawn until long after dusk, and Nana had to come and look for him with the candle, because the boy couldn't go to sleep unless he was there. He was wet through with the dew and quite earthy from diving into the burrows the boy had made for him in the flower bed, and Nana grumbled as she rubbed him off with the corner of her apron. "You must have your old bunny," she said. "Fancy all that fuss for a toy." The boy sat up in a bed and stretched out his hand. "Give me my bunny," he said. "You mustn't say that. He isn't a toy. He's real." When the little rabbit heard that, he was happy. He knew that that was what the skin horse had said was true at last. The nursery magic had happened to him, and he was a toy no longer. He was real. The boy himself had said it. That night he was almost too happy to sleep, and so much love stirred in his little sawdust heart that it almost burst. And into his boot-button eyes that had long ago lost their polish there came a look of wisdom and beauty, so that even Nana noticed it the next morning when she picked him up and said, "I declare that old bunny hasn't got quite a knowing expression." That was a wonderful summer. Near the house where they lived, there was a wood, and in the long June evenings, the boy liked to go there after tea to play. He took the velveteen rabbit with him, and before he wandered off to pick flowers or play at brigands among the trees, he always made the rabbit a little nest somewhere among the bracken, where he would be quite cozy, for he was a kind-hearted little boy, and he liked bunnies to be comfortable. One evening, while the rabbit was lying there alone, watching the ants that ran to and fro between his velvet paws and the grass, he saw two strange beings creep out of the tall bracken near him. They were rabbits like himself, but quite furry and brand new. They must have been very well made, for their seams didn't show at all, and they changed shape in a queer way when they moved. One minute they were long and thin, and the next minute fat and bunchy, instead of always staying the same like he did. Their feet padded softly on the ground, and they crept quite close to him, twitching their noses while the rabbit stared hard to see which side the clockwork stuck out, for he knew that people who jump generally have something to wind them up, but he couldn't see it. They were evidently a new kind of rabbit altogether. They stared at him, and the little rabbit stared back, and all the time their noses twitched. "Why don't you get up and play with us?" one of them asked. "I don't feel like it," said the rabbit, for he didn't want to explain that he had no clockwork. "Ha!" said the furry rabbit. "It's as easy as anything," and he gave a big hop sideways and stood on his hind leg. "I don't believe you can," he said. "I can," said the little rabbit. "I can jump higher than anything." He meant when the boy threw him, but of course he didn't want to say so. "Can you hop on your hind legs?" asked the furry rabbit. That was a dreadful question, for the velveteen rabbit had no hind legs at all. The back of him was made all in one piece like a pincushion. He sat still in the bracken and hoped that the other rabbits would notice. "I don't want to," he said again. But the wild rabbit had very sharp eyes, and this one stretched in his neck and looked. "He hasn't got any hind legs," he called out. "Fancy a rabbit without any hind legs." And he began to laugh. "Ha, ha, ha." "I have," cried the little rabbit. "I've got hind legs. I'm sitting on them." "Then stretch them out and show me like this," said the wild rabbit, and began to whirl around and dance till the little rabbit got quite dizzy. "I don't like dancing," he said. "I'd rather sit still." all the while he was longing to dance, for a funny new tickly feeling ran through him, and he thought he would give anything in the world to be able to jump around like these rabbits did. The strange rabbit stopped dancing and came quite close. He came so close this time that his long whiskers brushed the velveteen rabbit's ears, and then he wrinkled his nose suddenly and flattened his ears and jumped backwards. "He doesn't smell right," he explained. "He isn't a rabbit at all. He isn't real." "I am real," said the little rabbit. "I am real," the boy said so, and he nearly began to cry. Just then there was a sound of footsteps, and the boy ran past near them, and with a stamp of feet and a flash of white tail, the two strange rabbits disappeared. "Come back and play with me," called the little rabbit. "Oh, do come back. I know I am real." But there was no answer. Only the little ants ran to and fro, and the bracken swayed gently when the two strangers had passed. The velveteen rabbit was all alone. "Oh dear," he thought, "why did they run away like that? Why can't they stop and talk to me?" For a long time he lay very still, watching the bracken, hoping they would come back. But they never returned, and presently the sun sank lower, and the little white moths fluttered about, and the boy came and carried him home. Weeks passed, and the little rabbit grew very old and shabby. But the boy loved him just as much. He loved him so hard that he loved all his whiskers off, and the pink lining to his ears turned gray, and his brown spots faded. He even began to lose his shape, and he scarcely looked like a rabbit anymore, except to the boy. To him, he was always beautiful, and that was all that the little rabbit cared about. He didn't mind how he looked to other people, because the nursery magic had made him real. And when you are real, shabbiness doesn't matter. And then one day, the boy was ill. His face grew very flushed, and he talked in his sleep, and his little body was so hot that it burned the rabbit when he held him close. Strange people came and went in the nursery. A light burned all night, and through it all, the little velveteen rabbit lay there, hidden from sight under the bedclothes, and he never stirred, for he was afraid that if they found him, someone might take him away, and he knew that the boy needed him. It was a long, weary time, for the boy was too ill to play, and the little rabbit found it rather dull with nothing to do all day. But he snuggled down patiently and looked forward to the time when the boy should be well again. And they would go out in the garden among the flowers and the butterflies and play splendid games in the raspberry thicket like they used to. All sorts of delightful things he planned, and while the boy lay half asleep, he crept up close to the pillow and whispered them in his ear. And presently the fever turned and the boy got better. He was able to sit up in his bed and look at picture books while the little rabbit cuddled close to his side, and one day let him get up and dress. It was a bright sunny morning and the windows stood wide open. They had carried the boy out into the balcony wrapped in a shawl, and the little rabbit lay tangled up among the bedclothes thinking. The boy was going to the seaside tomorrow. Everything was arranged, and now it only remained to carry out the doctor's orders. They talked about it all while the little rabbit lay under the bedclothes with just his head peeping out and listened. The room was to be disinfected, and all the books and toys that the boy had played with in the bed must be burned. "Hurrah!" thought the little rabbit. "Tomorrow we shall go to the seaside." For the boy had often talked of the seaside, and he wanted very much to see the big waves coming in and the tiny crabs and the sandcastles. Just then, Nana caught sight of him. "How about his old bunny?" she asked. "Back?" said the doctor. "Why, a massive scarlet fever germ. Burn it at once." "What? Nonsense. Get him a new one. He mustn't have that anymore." And so the little rabbit was put into a sack with the old picture books and a lot of rubbish and carried out to the end of the garden, behind the fowl house. There was a fine place to make bonfire, only the gardener was too busy just then to attend to it. He had the potatoes to dig and the green peas to gather, but next morning he promised to come quite early and burn the whole lot. That night the boy slept in a different bedroom and had a new bunny to sleep with him. It was a splendid bunny, all white plush with real black eyes, but the boy was too excited to care very much about it, for tomorrow he was going to the seaside. And that in itself was such a wonderful thing that he could think of nothing else. And while the boy was asleep, dreaming of the seaside, the little rabbit lay among the old picture books in the corner behind the fowl house, and he felt very lonely. The sack had been left on time, so by wriggling a bit, he was able to get his head through the opening and look out. He was shivering a little, for he had always been used to sleeping in a proper bed, and by this time, his coat had worn so thin and threadbare from hugging that it was no longer any protection to him. Nearby, he could see the thicket of raspberry canes growing tall and close like a tropical jungle, in whose shadow he had placed the boy on bygone mornings. He thought of these long, sunlit hours in the garden, how happy they were, and a great sadness came over him. He seemed to see that all passed before him, each more beautiful than the other, the fairy huts and the flower beds, quiet evenings in the wood when he lay in the bracken, and the little ant ran over his paws, the wonderful day when he first knew that he was real. He thought of the skin horse, so wise and gentle, and all that he had told him. Of what use is it to be loved and lose one's beauty and become real if it all ended like this? And a tear, a real tear, trickled down his little shabby velvet nose and fell to the ground. And then a strange thing happened. For where the tear had fallen, a flower grew out of the ground. A mysterious flower, not at all like any that grew in the garden. It had slender green leaves, the color of emerald, and in the center of the leaves, a blossom like a golden cup. It was so beautiful that the little rabbit forgot to cry. It just lay there watching. And presently, the blossom opened, and out of it, there stepped a fairy. She was quite the loveliest fairy in the whole world. Her dress was a pearl, and dewdrops were flowering around her neck and her hair was like the most perfect flower of all. She came close to the little rabbit and gathered him up in her arms and kissed him on the velvety nose that was all damp from crying. "Little rabbit," she said, "don't you know who I am?" The rabbit looked up at her, and it seemed to him that he had seen her face before, but he couldn't think where. "I am the nursery magic fairy," she said. "I take care of all the playthings that the children have loved. When they are old and worn out and children don't need them anymore, then I come and take them away with me and turn them into real." "Wasn't I real before?" asked the little rabbit. "You were real to the boy," the fairy said, "because he loved you. Now you shall be real to everyone." And she held the little rabbit close to her arms and flew with him into the wood. It was light now, and the moon had risen. All the forest was beautiful, and the bends of the bracken shone like frosted silver. In the open glade between the tree trunks, the wild rabbits danced with their shadows on the velvet grass. But when they saw the fairy, they all stopped dancing and stood around in a ring to stare at her. "I brought you a new playfellow," the fairy said. "You must be very kind to him and teach him all he needs to know in Rabbit Land, for he is going to live with you forever and ever." And she kissed the little rabbit again and put him down on the grass. "Run and play, little rabbit," she said. But the little rabbit sat quite still for a moment and never moved. For when he saw all the wild rabbits dancing around him, he suddenly remembered about his hind leg, and he didn't want them to see that he was made all in one piece. He did not know that when the fairy kissed him that last time, she had changed him altogether. And he might have sat there a long time, too shy to move, if just then something had tickled his nose, and before he thought what he was doing, he lifted his hind toe to scratch it. And he found that he actually had hind legs. Instead of a dingy velveteen, he had brown fur, soft and shiny. His ears twitched by themselves, and his whiskers were so long that they brushed the grass. He gave one leap, and the joy of using those hind legs was so great that he went springing about the turf on them, jumping sideways and whirling around as others did. And he grew so excited that when at last he had to stop to look for the fairy, she had gone. He was a real rabbit at last, at home with the other rabbits. Autumn passed, and winter, and in the spring, when the days grew warm and sunny, the boy went out to play in the woods behind the house. And then while he was playing, two rabbits crept out from the bracken and peeked at him. One of them was brown all over, but the other had strange markings under his fur, as though long ago he had been spotted. And the spot still showed through, and about his little soft nose and his round black eyes, there was something familiar. So that the boy thought to himself, "Why? He looks like my old buddy that was lost when I had scarlet fever." But he never knew that it really was his own bunny, come back to look at the child who had first helped him to be real. The end. Sorry, it took a little longer.
Well, thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Abby and